Chapter 16. I made it out of the park, exhausted and barely able to keep from screaming with pain. I stopped at the first gas station I could find so I could take off my boots. Old and comfortable as they were, cowboy boots were not meant for running cross-country. I leaned against the side of the building by the payphones, away from the street, and sat down on the sidewalk. My body throbbed with pain, slowing as my heart and breathing did. I gave McFinn an hour, but he didn't show up. No one did. I got restless, fast. Could both McFinn and Tara West have been captured? Murphy's cops might not have looked like much, but I knew they were tough and smart. And certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I rummaged in my duster's pockets, came up with enough change to make a phone call, then made my painful way to the phone. "Midwestern Arcane, this is Miss Rodriguez," Susan said when she picked up the phone. Her voice sounded tired and stressed. "Hi, Susan," I said. My shoulder twinged and I gritted my teeth, pulling my duster around me a little more tightly. The evening was bringing a cold wind and gray clouds, and the sweats in the cotton t-shirt Tara West had given me weren't enough to keep out the chill. "Harry," she said disbelievingly. "My God, where are you? The police are looking for you. They keep calling here. Something about a murder." "A misunderstanding," I said, and leaned against the wall. The pain was getting worse as the chill soaked in, and I started to shiver. "You sound terrible," Susan said. "Are you all right?" "Can you help me?" There was a pause at the other end of the line. "I don't know, Harry. I don't know what's going on. I don't want to get into any trouble." "I could explain it," I offered, struggling to keep my words clear through the pain. "But it's sort of a long story." I dropped a subtle emphasis on that last word. Sometimes it scares me how easy it is to get people to do what I want them to do, if you know something about them. "Story, huh?" Susan said. I could hear a sudden twinge of interest in her voice. "Sure. Murder, violence, blood, monsters. Give you the whole scoop if you give me a ride." "You bastard," she breathed, but I thought she was smiling. "I would have come to get you anyway." "Sure you would have," I said, but I felt a smile on my own lips. I told her the address of the gas station and hoped that the feds hadn't taken the time to get a wiretap for Susan's phone. "Give me half an hour," Susan said. "Maybe more, depending on traffic." I squinted up at the sky, which was rapidly darkening, both with oncoming dusk and the heavy, brooding clouds. "Time's important. Hurry if you can." "Just take care of yourself, Harry," she said, worry in her voice. Then she hung up the phone. I did too, and leaned back against the wall. I hated to draw Susan into this. It made me feel cheap, somehow. Weak. It was the whole problem with chivalry that I had. I didn't want a girl to be riding to my rescue, protecting me. It just didn't seem right. I would never have wanted to endanger Susan either. I was a murder suspect, and the police were looking for me. She could get into trouble for aiding and abetting or something like that. On the other hand, I didn't have much choice. I didn't have any money for a cab, even if I could get one this far from the city. I didn't have a car. I was in no shape to walk anywhere. My contacts, in the person of McFinn and Tara West, were gone. I had to have help, and Susan was the only one I thought I could trust to do it. If there was a story involved, she'd go to hell itself to get it. And I had used it against her, to lever her into helping me. I didn't like it that I had. I thought better of myself. I ducked my head against the cold, and shivered, and wondered if I'd done the right thing. It was while I was leaning against the wall, waiting, that I heard a scrabbling sound around the corner of the gas station. I tensed and waited. The sound repeated itself, a definite pattern of three short movements, a signal. Warily, I made my way to the back of the building, ready to turn and run as best I could. Tara West was there, behind the building, crouched down between several empty cardboard boxes that smelled of beer and a garbage bin. She was naked, her body a uniform shade of brown, without an ounce of excess fat on her. Her hair was mussed and had leaves and bits of twig caught in it. Her amber eyes looked even more alien and wild than usual. She rose and came toward me, evidently unconscious of the cold. She moved with a feral sort of grace that made me all too aware of her legs and her hips, even though I was battered, fatigued, and brooding. "Wizard," she greeted me, "give me your coat." I snapped my eyes back up to hers, then slipped out of my duster, though my shoulder screamed with pain as I pulled the coat off of it, and my body sent up an entirely different round of complaints as the cold wind gleefully cut through the thin clothes I wore beneath the duster. Tara took the coat and slid into it, wrapping it around her and buttoning it close. The sleeves were too long and the coat dangled to her ankles, but it covered her lean, strong body well enough. I found myself faintly regretful that I'd had it with me. "What happened?" I asked her. She shook her head. "The police do not know how game runs or how to chase it. One grabbed me. I made him let go." She glanced around us warily and raked her fingers through her hair, trying to comb out leaves and sticks. "I led them away from you and McFinn, changed, and made my way back to the camp. I followed McFinn's trail." "Where is he?" She bared her teeth. "The federal people caught him. They took him away." "Hell's bells," I breathed. "Do you know where?" "Into a car," she responded. "No," I said, growing frustrated. "Do you know where the car went?" She shook her head. "But they had an argument with the one called Murphy. Murphy had more people with her, more guns. McFinn went where Murphy wanted him to go." "Downtown," I said. "Murphy would want him in holding, down at the station. Hell, it's on the same floor as Special Investigations." Tara shrugged, her expression hard. "As you say." "We don't have much time," I said. "For what?" "There's nothing more to be done. We cannot reach him now. McFinn will change when the moon rises. Murphy and the police people will die." "Like hell," I said. "I've got to get to the station before it happens." Tara studied me with narrowed eyes. "The police are hunting for you as well, wizard. If you go there, you too will be locked in a cage. You will not be allowed to go to McFinn." "I wasn't planning on asking permission," I said. "But I think I can get inside. I just have to get to my apartment." "The police will be watching it," Tara said. "They will be waiting for you there. And in any case, you have no car and no money. How can you reach Chicago before the moon rises? There is nothing more to be done, wizard." There came a crunch of tires around the side of the gas station, and I peeked around the corner. Susan's car was just coming to a halt. Raindrops were starting to come down and to make little impact circles on her Taurus's windshield. I felt a sudden surge of defiant energy. "There's our ride," I said. "Follow." I relished throwing the terse command at Tara, and she stared at me. I turned my back on her and stalked over to the car. Susan leaned across and threw open the passenger door, then blinked at me in surprise. She blinked again when Tara slipped in front of me, threw the passenger seat forward, and slid into the back seat with a flash of long, lean legs, then regarded Susan with unreadable, distant eyes. I pushed the seat back and settled into place. It was a real effort to shut the door, and a small sound of discomfort escaped my mouth. When I looked at Susan, she was staring at me and at my arm. I looked down and found that the bandage and part of the t-shirt sleeve were soaked through with blood. The purple bruises had spread a few inches, it seemed, and showed beneath the shirt's sleeve.
"Good Lord," Susan gasped. "What happened?"
"I got shot," I said.
"Doesn't it hurt?"
Susan stammered, still stunned.
"Is this female always so stupid?"
Tara asked. I winced. Susan turned in the seat and glowered at Tara, and I looked back to see Tara narrow her eyes and bare her teeth in what one could hardly say was a smile. "It hurts," I confirmed. "Susan, take us to my place, but don't stop when you get there. Just drive past slowly. I'll tell you everything on the way." Susan gave Tara one last skeptical glance, particularly taking in my bullet-torn duster and Tara's bare limbs.
"This better be good, Dresden."
Then she slapped the car into gear and started driving with an irritated haste back toward the city.
I wanted to collapse into sleep. But I made myself explain most of what had happened for the past couple of days to Susan, editing out the mentions of the White Council, demons, that sort of thing. Susan listened and drove and asked intent questions, fastening gleefully onto the information concerning the Northwest Passage Project and Johnny Marconi's links to the business opposing it. Rain started coming down in a steady, murky veil, and she flickered on the windshield wipers. "So, you've got to get to MacFin," Susan said when I was finished, "before the moon comes up and he transforms." "You got it," I said. "Why don't you call Murphy, tell her what's going on?" I shook my head. "Murphy isn't going to be in the mood to listen. She busted me and I fled arrest. She'd have me in a cell before I could say abracadabra."
"But it's raining," Susan protested. "We won't be able to see the moon tonight. Won't that stop MacFin from changing?"
I blinked at the question and glanced back at Tara. She was watching the buildings pass outside the window as the streetlights started flickering on. She didn't look at me, but shook her head.
"No such luck," I told Susan. "And with these clouds, I can't even tell if the sun has gone down yet, much less how much time we have before moonrise."
Susan breathed out slowly.
"How are you going to get to MacFin, then?"